The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic. Coming up this week...
Saint-Maximin, Willock, promising, Isak, it's a brilliantly improvised finish.
Ice-cold Alex, Champions League pursuit, reheated by Swede.
Big moment, big penalty, monumental penalty for the Magpies.
Our next game is huge. Is it a good time for the international break? And it's 6 points all round as Langley's promotion chasers also seal a crucial league double. Hello everyone, this is Pod on the Tyne. I am Taylor Payne and I've got three lovely chaps with me here today. Chris Woff, George Corkin and Jacob Whitehead. How we doing, boys? We all right?
Who goes first? Should we do this in the order of seniority, or shall I take the ball and then very, very sneakily hand it over to Jacob to convert?
I'm pretty good. Yeah. No drama here.
Yeah, that was worth the wait, wasn't it?
Yeah. Dispatch that with venom, Jacob.
How are you, Chris?
Well, off air, I was admonished by George for eating on camera, and then I was called an reminiscent of an orangutan by Jacob. So, yeah, you know, wonderful.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. Yeah,
exactly. There's quite an orange light on you here as well, which is kind of feeding into the...
Jason Tindall-esque.
Yeah. Have you been up to Tantasy again on Heaton High Road, have you? You're looking very well. Getting ready for Love Island this year.
Yes, well, I was at all from sunny Nottingham on a Friday night when I was... certainly fiery out on the pitch anyway, which we'll get onto, but yeah, it was certainly a fiery. How are you anyway, Taylor?
I'm not too bad, yeah. I'm pretty good. I'm feeling decent. You know, I'm ready to get back stuck back into this again and talk about Eddie's Champions League possible mags. You never know, do you? Hey, George, how are you? Are you okay?
Yes, happy to be back. And yeah, very happy that Newcastle have started.
Good to have you back.
What?
Good to have you back, George.
Thank you. Yeah, and yeah, pleased that Newcastle have started winning again, which has pretty much coincided with my absence, but there you go.
See, maybe Jacob was right all along.
Come on, you Maggies.
Yes, fantastic win on Friday night down at Nottingham Forest. That's 6 points from the Wolves and Forest games. It's just what the doctor ordered, isn't it, Chris?
It very much is, and it was what Newcastle needed to rediscover some momentum if they were going to really push towards trying to secure Champions League qualification between now and the end of the season. They'd lost their way a little bit, basically the end of February going into the start of March, and it was crucial they got at least 4 points from the two matches, and to get six is absolutely huge. To score an injury time of both matches as well, to come from behind for the first time this season to win a game.
Yeah.
And they showed a heck of a lot of resilience. I thought they were excellent for large spells on Friday night beyond putting the ball in the back of the net, which is something we've kept saying over the course of the last few weeks. And yes, it feels again like they've picked up and that momentum's with them, and maybe other teams are stuttering. Obviously, we've had Spurs and Conte's implosion over the weekend. There's been Manchester United have obviously been in the FA Cup, so that allowed Newcastle the opportunity to catch up with them a little bit. But then Liverpool continue to be hit and miss of their own accord. So I think that really to go into the international break as they have, Newcastle, rather than maybe looking behind them as they were a few weeks ago, the likes of Brighton and Brentford are suddenly looking above and thinking if they win the next match, then they will leapfrog Manchester United and they'll be back into third position on goal difference.
It was another scrap though, George, wasn't it? And it's good to see Newcastle are prepared and able to win dirty occasionally. We overcame that Wolves equaliser and now we've come from behind to beat Forest.
Yeah, that tenacity is very important. That character, they showed that against Wolves, not really convincing, but much more convincing at Forest. And, you know, I thought Forest were pretty awful, I have to say, but notwithstanding that, Newcastle played well.
Yeah.
And, you know, good to see that again. I mean, the one thing you know that hasn't gone is this habit of making kind of errors at the back. And, it would be nice if that could be ironed out. But, yeah, I mean, I do feel a bit of relief, actually, because it did get a bit sticky in February and March, as Chris said. They weren't convincing. It felt a bit tired. It felt like things needed to be switched up a bit. They have now done that. We'll talk about Isak, of course. But it's nice to have that feeling again that people can come into the team, make a difference.
Yeah.
And they had to kind of force their way through that match by the end in quite amusing fashion, actually. but they played well, and that felt like a good moment to me and a big moment. And yes, they've cemented that position near the top of the division, which is good. Good to see.
Absolutely. Jacob, it was quite a bit of one-way traffic, wasn't it, in that first half? Newcastle are creating chances, and you would say that Forest goal probably comes about a bit against the run of play, doesn't it? And it's Botman, does he just take his eye off the situation? Does he not get a call? There's obviously been a miscommunication there somewhere. It was not a great way to concede, was it?
No. What's quite interesting is he plays it with the outside of his foot, which is usually something which you feel like you do when you have extreme confidence, kind of playing it like that. It just doesn't go right for him. It looked as if he didn't quite see Dennis's run. It was kind of on his blind side.
Yeah.
And he sort of didn't quite hit it properly. But I suppose sort of almost everyone in the defence has sort of had an individual error over the last few weeks. It's sort of one all each. And hopefully they've all got their single mistake for the season out of the way. I mean, I also have a hard time putting too much blame on Botman's door, seeing as he's had the whole season. That's the main error he's made. And, you know, the amount of chances which it feels like strikers have missed and haven't got kind of pelters for, I think it's forgivable.
Is there any chance it's a little bit of a confidence problem here with what happened with Nick Pope against Liverpool, and maybe the defenders are thinking a little bit too much about playing the ball back, or do we think it's just a case of he took his eye off the ball and it's a bit of a one-off? It seems like a strange one, that, Chris, and it's a couple of little worrying moments have crept in over the last couple of weeks where that sort of thing's been happening.
I actually think it's the opposite to a certain degree. I think with Botman, complacency would be the wrong word, but I think because he's so comfortable in possession, that actually the fact that he didn't look and the fact that he did try and pass it like that, and he's schooled in the Ajax way of the goalkeeper being an extra player. And I know that's something Newcastle have worked on in terms of almost not giving it back to the goalkeeper on the floor if they can avoid it and try to play forward.
Yeah.
And it seems that they've regressed from that a little bit over the last couple of weeks. They seem to be giving it to Nick Pope in those situations a lot more. And for someone who's had those nervy moments, I don't think it sort of serves him particularly well. I don't think it serves the team particularly well. So it's one of those which I'm sure will now, every time he looks across now, he will. It'll be like Shea given that time when he put the ball down and the Crystal Palace striker came round and nicked the ball from
Coventry,
and single time after that, he always checked over his shoulder. I think it'll be the same now from Botman. I think it's one of those where he wouldn't do the same situation. I mean, it wasn't, even if Dennis hadn't been there, the Forest were pressing quite high as it was, and so it probably wasn't the right decision to make. And sometimes you do just need to be a little bit more negative, whether that's to boot it up the field or kick it out of play. Sometimes that's just it's not necessarily a massively negative option of its own accord. It's just you need it in that very moment in time. That's the right decision to make. And I just think it was the wrong decision. And for someone, as Jacob said, who's made so many correct decisions and brilliant players across the course of the season, you'll forgive him for that, particularly seeing as Newcastle found a way to come back and win as well.
Yeah, I've got to remember, he's still young and he's still learning the game, isn't he? And another player who's young and learning the game and seems to be going from strength to strength every week, George's Alexander Isak. And I don't know what you call that finish that he did in that goal. Is it a sideways jumping shin volley? I've got no idea what that was. All I know is it was bloody brilliant.
Oh, I'm sure Chris has got some sort of jargon for that. And inside, outside, half volley pivot, fulcrum axis.
Yeah, shinner pivot.
A shinner pivot. Yeah. It was beautiful though, wasn't it? And I think, I don't want to use the word emergence because that's not quite the right word, but the way he's kind of grasped it in the last two matches in particular has been great to see. I think, you know, after he was signed, he made a kind of immediate impact. He's had a very disrupted season in terms of sort of fitness and injury, but suddenly he's looking like the player Newcastle signed now, isn't he? He's looking every bit as if he's ready for it. I mean, I kind of think that when he's come into the team previously, it's like, okay, what kind of centre forward is he? What kind of striker is he? Can he hold the ball up? Is he that kind of player? Where are his strengths? You see flashes of it, but it's felt sort of not unconvincing, but it's you know, he certainly hasn't made a compelling case to start, and now he absolutely has. He's done that. He looks to have a bit of everything. He's got that grace. He's got athleticism. And the way he finished, well, both goals, including the penalty, was just so cool, so clever. And, yeah, very, very exciting, and exactly what Newcastle needed. I think I made the point 2 or 3 weeks ago that suddenly there felt like there was that bit of uncertainty up front, whereas at the start of the season, you didn't have that. And I just thought he was superb against Forest, had a bit of everything in his play. But, yeah, blimey, looks like a really good player now.
On defining that first finish, it's what me and my friends would describe as a microwave, which is a term we invented.
Okay.
During deepest, darkest lockdown, there was a couple of months where the only sport you're allowed to do with other people was golf. And none of us were any good at golf, so we were topping it the whole time. And a shot, which was effective, but was improvised and didn't necessarily look really pretty, but did the job brilliantly, was known as a microwave.
Did you come up with a name?
Yeah, so it's to do with microwave. It's not necessarily the best way to cook it. It's not necessarily the prettiest way to cook it, but it's effective and it does the job. It's a microwave.
You two are as bad as each other, honestly.
Oh,
get God. In the bin.
Isaac Skull, perfect, perfect microwave. It's not like, you know, George sous vide Culkin and his way of cooking.
I've got a sous vide, actually. I have got a sous vide.
That is the most middle-class thing you've ever said.
Wait, it's a bath. It's the bath.
They're great, then, but this isn't the Athletics Cookery Podcast, is it? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a sous vide, but that is the bath, basically, isn't it?
Where has this gone? What I did like, Jacob, about that goal from Isaac was it came in a point in the match where he had been switched and pushed out wide onto the left, and Alan Saint-Maximin had been made to come inside, whether that was to deal with him having a bit of an injury or effectiveness or whatever. But Isaac came from the left to score that goal, and it just shows he can play across that front three, and he will still get in the box and he'll still get chances.
Yeah, that's been a bit of a, you know, press emergency button, send Isaac out wide. Like against Southampton in the first leg of the Carabao Cup semi, that goal came from him finding space out wide and crossing in for Gillinton in the middle.
That's right, yeah.
It just leads to so much versatility. He's an intelligent player, and he's scored in so many different ways over the last few weeks. There's that brave header against Wolves, there was the kind of improvised finish, there's him heading out wide. Yeah, really encouraging.
Can I just say as well, what the fuck was the lad for Nottingham Forest doing for that penalty? What does he think he's playing at? Is he waving to his mate in the crowd? There was no reason for him to have his hand up that high. It was just one of the most monumentally stupid things I've ever seen on a football pitch, Chris, and I've seen some really monumentally stupid things on football pitches over the years.
You're a Newcastle fan, Taylor, of course. Yeah,
there's been quite a few in recent weeks as well. So.
What was he doing?
And you could see immediately he knew as well. But I mean, just before we get on to the penalty itself, I mean, in terms of Isak, one of the things, and I don't know, obviously I was at the game, so I don't know what it's like sort of watching the last couple of games on TV, but the only, and this is, I'm not saying he's like Erling Haaland in terms of the way that he finishes and things like that, but the when he receives the ball, lays it off, and the ability to quickly turn and get beyond a defender and make the run, the only player I've seen who's able to do that in recent times to such speed and without the defender being able to react is Erling Haaland this season. There's just something that was so impressive, particularly on Friday night, the way that he got in. And for the disallowed goal, the way that he controls the ball on the floor, gets up to his feet.
The footwork
to move from one foot to the other, and then falling backwards with his left foot to be able to dink it to the back post as well.
Yeah.
The clarity of thought and the ability to do that was just wonderful. And I thought that his all-round performance, he provided so much. I mean, when he was through the middle, he was effective. When he was out left, he was effective. And he's shown so much more to his game than he had previously in terms of that. I think the concern was, particularly against sort of bulkier Premier League defences, would he have the physicality to be able to deal with them? And he sort of found a different way of, he's just too quick, he's just too athletic, he's too clever in his movement to get away from them and get beyond them. And he's shown up two defences there. I mean, I agree with George, I thought Nottingham Forest were absolutely appalling. But that regardless, it's still an intimidating place. And certainly once the goal had been disallowed, the atmosphere had really changed and it was fully with Forest at that point, and you feared that Newcastle, how are they going to react with this? But it was someone like Isak who managed to drag them, kept dragging them forward, and the directness that the likes of him and Jacob Murphy brought In terms of getting the ball into the box, really helped Newcastle.
It's a pressurised situation, George, isn't it? Getting a penalty in the 93rd minute and having to try and deal with that. But Kieran Trippier eased that pressure on Alexander Isak a little bit, didn't he, with some lovely shithousery.
Yes, and I wanted to pay tribute to Chris and the piece that he wrote in the media aftermath of the Forest game, because he basically sort of boiled down those last few minutes and unpicked them and what happened. I mean, you know, watching at home, it's just there's Trippier, he's standing up, he's going to take it, he's getting all the usual shit, which is, it's now sort of the done thing, isn't it, that everybody does when a team gets awarded the penalty. The opposition players crowd around the ball, they try, and the goalkeeper steps forward. Nick Pope, of course, does this all the time. They try and put the player off who's taking the penalty, and Trippier is just there standing, taking it, and eventually Tierney, the referee, gets everybody out of the box. And the funny thing, if you watch the clip back, and Chris made reference to this, is that you see Trippier really smiling.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like he's smiling at the goalkeeper, but they're, you know, whether it's Newcastle fans or whatever, but he's like loving it, and then just turns around, gives the ball to Isak, who steps up. So by that point, there's nobody around him to put him off. It's just that sort of thing. So Isak's had time to prepare himself. He's had time to take deep breaths and think about it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, dispatch the penalty brilliantly. But I just love that. I mean, you all know that my affections are very fickle. I mean, this season I've gone from sort of Trippier to Dan Burn. I mean, I've fallen for Dan Burn big time. And now it's Trippier all over again, because I just love that moment. And it's just a little thing. I mean, to actually have the wit to do that at the time.
Yeah.
It's so clever. I mean, of course, now everybody will try and do that. But in the heat of the moment, at the end of a match, everything's at stake, and it just buys that bit of time, allows Isak to take a breath, and then does it. Just so, so clever. Brilliant.
It shows really good leadership, doesn't it? And he's just took the ball away, and he's took the pressure off him completely. And it gives him that vital 30 seconds to cool his head down and just get ready for it. You know, it's really good leadership.
Was it shithousery, or was it anti-shithousery to stop Forrest from shithousing? Or was it...
I said shithouse prevention.
Shithouse prevention.
Counter-shithousing.
Antidote to shithouse.
Yeah. Gagan shithousing.
Yeah,
excellent.
Really good, though. I mean, because Newcastle have done the opposite. You know, as I said, Newcastle have done exactly the same thing that Forest players are doing. So to sort of know, to have the nous to then know how to counter it as well. Brilliant.
Just on the penalty, George, I mean, you did say before it was a very clever penalty,
yeah,
but it wasn't really a twatted penalty, was
it?
So how did you feel about this?
Well, I mean, not happy, but then very happy. So
I hope you didn't celebrate out of principle.
I mean, it's one of those things, it's like, oh, don't fucking die. Oh, yes, get in! So it's sort of, I think the circumstances changed it a bit.
He did that weird curved run-up as well, didn't he? Like what Bruno did in the penalty shootout. It's exactly the same. I was like, don't put it over the bar, please.
No, there were mixed feelings. Oh, don't do that. And then celebrated. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. One player who didn't care for some of Newcastle United's antics was Jonjo Shelvey, who very much got a taste of his own medicine, didn't he, Jacob? The boot is now firmly on the other foot.
Everyone watches football for narrative, right? It was great.
It's everywhere, yeah.
Exactly what you want. I mean, like, I like the way that kind of when you heard him speaking, you could kind of see at the start, there's like a little bit of barb to it, and then he kind of realised, actually, I'm not really going to win this argument, and it sort of turned into a little bit of fun. But fair play to him. Like, come on, that's why you watch it, isn't it? Like, a little bit of needle.
Realising midway through the sentence that he is one of the worst people for that very same thing, and he has no grounds to be standing there whinging about it.
I sort of change my mind quite often mid-sentence. It's quite a regular thing in this podcast, so sort of knowing how to rescue things.
Yeah, if you've listened to this podcast for long enough, you'll have heard that quite often from all of us. But yeah, excellent stuff. Chris, let's talk about that Elliot Anderson disallowed goal. I'm still raging, to be honest. Still raging about it. I don't understand how two Nottingham Forest players can play the ball before it touches Sean Longstaff, and that goal still be disallowed for offside. If anybody can explain this to me, it's you, Chris, but I have a feeling you're on the same camp as me.
I am on the same camp as you. I mean, just to explain to anyone, in case you haven't actually seen exactly what goes on. So basically, Sean Longstaff is overlapping on the right-hand side of the box. Isak is a few yards behind him and tries to centre the ball. Felipe, the Nottingham Forest defender, slides across, but very clearly is trying to clear the ball. Might be sliding, but very clearly is swinging towards to clear the ball. It hasn't just deflected off him. Then another Forest defender kicks it just about half a yard onto Sean Longstaff as well. So two Forest players have touched the ball. Quite clearly, both of them trying to kick it as well, not just a deflection.
Yeah.
And then the ball ricochets off Sean Longstaff, goes back to Isak, who, as I said, on the ground, controls it, does a trick, lifts at the back post with his left foot, and then Elliot Hansen heads it in. So initially the goal is given, and nobody within the ground is thinking that it's going to be disallowed. The only thing was that Anderson jumped over his man and he went down pretending he was injured or seemingly holding his head.
Yeah.
And then after a couple of minutes, it becomes clear that VAR are looking at it, and we were trying to work out why. And the referee, I thought, was appalling. I thought Paul Tierney was absolutely terrible all game. But the one thing I will say, not in his defence, because I'm not trying to defend him because the rest of the performance was so bad, but I almost got the impression that when he gets called over the VAR screen, he is thinking in his own mind, they've called me over here for something. There must be something really big which I'm missing. Yeah. And it was almost like, right, I need to give this because they're telling me someone's offside or there needs to be. And you could almost see he was confused by the situation. And the explanation from the Premier League and PGMOL privately is basically, oh yeah, they thought it was a deflection off Felipe, which is just rubbish. It's just an absolutely terrible call. And I feel so much for Elliot Anderson because he came on, he made a huge impact, and what a moment for a 20-year-old Newcastle fan come through the academy to score their first goal, think it could be giving them a huge 3 points at the City Ground, celebrate in front of the travelling away fans, and has that taken away from him. I just thought it was terrible.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shit moment, to be honest. I felt really sorry for the lad, and I'm still a bit angry about it. I know we won the game and you don't really have to complain too much now, but they have to sort this out, don't they? It's just a mess.
If that's football, I don't want any part of football. I mean, I think that's my sort of response to it, that you can't sort of see what's wrong with it to start with, and then you pore over it for ages and ages, and you have that shitty delay after the kind of that moment of release, and it's fucking nonsense. It's a load of nonsense, and it makes the game much, much worse. It's not making it better in any way, shape or form that I can see. It just makes it worse. But yeah, if you want to take the positives from it, it was Anderson, and the way he performed, that was the Elliot Anderson we've been longing to see this season. I don't have to go back very far, really, to the Liverpool match where he made the start and had to come off.
Yeah,
because of the Pope sending off, you know, felt for him that day. And, you know, we've been kind of, you know, he's made appearances in the cup, sort of waiting for that moment. And it did feel like he grasped it. I thought he really grasped it when he came on. There's a, you know, interesting contrast there with St. Maximin, who hasn't quite sort of grasped it, I don't think, in the last few weeks. And he just looked like he wanted to be involved. He looked like he was going to make a difference. And I thought Forrest were terrified of him. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. It you know, the disallowed goal was a big moment, but I'd prefer to sort of concentrate on his overall contribution, because I thought he was excellent, and you know, you'd want to see more of that. Really want to see more of that.
On the refereeing quickly, I don't know how much you guys like to lurk on the opposition social media, but I don't know if you saw after the game, Nottingham Forest put a post up on their Instagram saying that the referee had denied him 3 points due to his decision.
Good Lord.
It's quite the take.
Well, I think he was bad. I do think he was bad overall. I mean, that's, you know, that takes a bit of gall from Forrest, I would respectfully suggest. But
are they complaining about the penalty there? Is that what they're complaining about?
I think that it's to do with a penalty they believe they should have had for a tackle on Willock.
I think it was also the Newcastle's first goal. Cooper came out afterwards and said that they believed that there was a foul in the build-up.
Oh, that was bollocks, that. That was not a foul. There was no way that was a foul.
I mean, I should add that The Athletic's Nick Miller, who sat opposite me in the office this morning, resident Nottingham Forest fan, was ashamed of his club for this Instagram post. So And my comments were fairly similar, so I don't want to sort of suggest that all Forest fans are believing this, but it's quite the reach.
Well, fair enough.
In terms of the game, in terms of the referee, I mean, I don't mean to dig him out so much, but there was first half, there was a lot of challenges both ways that really, particularly for against Newcastle, where Shelvey committed several fouls and somehow was not booked in the first half, despite upending Bruno Guimaraes. Then the one that he did pull up for Forest was the one basically when he hadn't really touched Trippier and he got end up getting booked. I think it was Dennis. So it was some very poor officiating, but there was a lot of needle from the very first minute for reasons. Which I'm not entirely sure, but it got to such an extent that apparently at half time, Jason Tindall and Steve Cooper got called into the referee's office to basically tell both sides that they needed to calm down. I don't really understand why there was so much need. It was a bit odd. I don't know. It must have been a hangover from something, but I don't really know why.
There was a rotten tackle on Fabian Schär in about the fourth minute. They're like a scissors tackle, which could easily have been an ankle breaker if it's a slightly higher or slightly later. And yeah. They were flying around all over the place. How Shelvey didn't get booked, I've got no idea. It was ridiculous.
I'm convinced evening games have more needle in them, just as something about being under the lights sort of triggers a fight or flight response, which leads to more more bad tackles.
But yeah, it's fans have been in the pub as well. I mean, it's like, you know, yeah.
Everyone's up a height.
Everyone's up a height. Everyone's a bit aggressive. That's true.
George mentioned Alan St. Maximin earlier on there, Chris. What's happening with him at the minute? Because obviously he was taken off at half time. There was talk in the media that there was a bit of a hamstring injury, but is there something else going on here? Was it a tactical decision, or was he just not quite feeling it that night? Because he hasn't seemed to be quite feeling it for a while now.
No, he hasn't seemed. I mean, he's had flashes here and there. And I thought against Wolves there were moments where he really did contribute. It was a little bit odd on Friday, I will admit, and he was poor first half. I mean, he was involved in Newcastle's first goal, to be fair. He played on a good pass when he moved centrally, came across to the right and laid Willock off down the line to then cross it in. But I'll just read Eddie Howe's comments after the game when he was asked about St. Maximin. Alan wasn't quite right today, physically, I didn't think. He's been carrying a tight hamstring. I don't think it's a pull, it's just a little bit of tightness. For me, it was obvious during that first half that he probably wouldn't be able to carry on. Which is sort of saying he's injured, but also saying, but not really that injured. So it very much seems like a quote unquote Alan St. Maximin injury, which you quite often see towards the end of matches when he's always seems to be fine the week after. But I mean, the thing with Alan St. Maximin is, and this is what they think inside the club as well, is that he still does bring something different, particularly to Newcastle in home matches against sides who sit deep. He brings an ingenuity and a unique ability to take players on in the opposition half, which Newcastle don't really have anyone who can replicate that. Elliot Anderson brings something a little bit different, and hopefully he can start to bring some. But certainly between now and the end of the season, Alan St. Maximin has a huge part to play. We're going to get on injuries in a bit, but Miguel Almiron's not going to be seen basically throughout April. Anthony Gordon, it's not entirely sure he's going to be back for Man United or the week after that. So Newcastle have depleted numbers. They also have Callum Wilson, who has barely trained recently due to various illnesses and ailments. So Alan St. Maximin is still vital to Newcastle, certainly in the short to medium term. And he might not have really performed on Friday night, and whether that was down to having an injury or not, he is still someone who is highly valued within the club. And so therefore, I suspect against Manchester United, he will play a big part as long as he's fit.
And George as well, it's a great result for the team's confidence, isn't it, going into this break? And along with Spurs getting all Spursy as well against Southampton, that was a nice sort of four-point injury time swing we had there.
Yeah, some good results over the weekend. But yeah, I think it just calms everybody down. I mean, it's been a difficult spell around the cup final and since then. And, you know, perhaps that feeling that the season might have tailed away a bit, just a really good response to that in the last couple of matches, and sets it up beautifully, doesn't it? The team are away at the moment. They get a chance to kind of recover a bit, get a bit of sun on their faces, and then come back for a massive match at the end of that. But just really good that they've managed to draw a line and respond.
Absolutely. Right, time for a quick break. But before that, get yourselves over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and pick up a subscription to The Athletic and pay just £1.99 a month for your first year. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Go and get one now.
Hello. Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and this week on the Athletic Football Podcast, we're bringing you a two-part special on the future of football. What will the expanded 48-team World Cup look like? And is it actually such a terrible idea? Plus, UEFA against FIFA, a Super League in disguise. How would you feel if your team became part of a multi-club model? There is a lot to get stuck into. Matt Slater, Adam Crafton and Laura Williamson will be with us. Just search for the Athletic Football Podcast wherever you listen.
Right, chaps, international break time. So Newcastle are heading off to Dubai for a warm weather training camp. Chris, what can we expect for the squad while they're over there?
Well, some of them are already over there. So Newcastle have gone. I think they were given a few days off, some of the players. So they've jetted to various different places beforehand. Some of them already in Dubai. But I think it's going to be similar to the trip that they had this time last year as well during the national break. So whereas they went to Jeddah in January 2022 and then they went to Riyadh in December, and they were very much training camps alongside commercial activities, this is more a little bit of downtime but with training involved as well, and focus on Manchester United. So it won't be quite as intense as some of those previous camps. It'll be more a little bit of relaxation, that there's a acceptance that since the World Cup, certainly for those players who were at the World Cup, that they haven't really had a break. The likes of Callum Wilson needs time to recuperate. Hopefully this fortnight will allow him and Alan Saint-Maximin and others to really get back up to speed. So it's a combination of the two, rest and then focus on Manchester United, and the fact that they've got a big lead up to that game, and unlike Manchester United, don't have quite as many internationals away, certainly from the first 11. That hopefully gives them the opportunity to really attack that game and hopefully start pick up where they've just left off for the international break.
Yeah, it's come at a good time, hasn't it, Jacob? There's been some tired legs out there recently.
Yeah, I mean, like, the amount of small niggles which have been mentioned. I'm just quite jealous of them. It'd be lovely if we got an international break. Just got to jet off warm weather. I mean,
warm weather podcast.
Chris
camp.
Has been down the tanning salon, but that's the closest any of us have got.
Can you imagine if I did actually go to a tan salon? I would not have a bloody clue what to do.
Can I have 20 minutes aside? I don't know how to...
what do you mean what to do? You just lie down and slowly get brown? Or in your case, go from like blue to off-white?
He'd probably ask for medium rare, no one, Chris, wouldn't he?
I wouldn't know what to do. Well. Oh, God.
Sorry, Jacob, you got completely...
Yeah, I mean, I sidetracked it. I'll take the blame for that.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, like they did look like they needed a little break. I think that the timing of these two wins was good because it covered up that... I reckon these two wins meant that kind of their February was a wobble rather than a slump. I kind of feel like that's the correct terminology. Yeah. And just the rest now's probably come at quite a good time. Like, there's two important but slightly ugly wins. Get better and big April ahead.
Yeah. We've heard as well, George, recently that Nick Pope isn't going to travel with England after being announced in the squad originally, and Fraser Foster's going to be stepping in for him. Apparently Pope's been carrying a bit of a knock for a little while, which is it's a shame for him, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But again, you know, that sense that people need a break. I mean, not just physically, but mentally as well, after such a sort of intense and emotional spell of, you know, we know about his emotions after missing the cup final in such a sort of distressing fashion. It won't do him any harm. And yeah, there have been sort of the way he makes saves, the way he keeps Newcastle in matches and saves matches for Newcastle has been consistently brilliant. There has just been that flicker of uncertainty about the way he comes out of his box since that big moment against Liverpool. I think, you know, just that bit of a refresh will do everyone good.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been playing international standard football. There's absolutely no doubt about that. So, disappointed for him in that sense. But if Pickford was going to start both of these games, it does mean that, you know, he can have a bit of a rest and relax and recharge. I mean, mentally, it's been an absolutely kind of shattering period, I think, for all of us. You know, just watching the team has been exhausting, let alone playing for it. So, I'm pleased he's going to get a bit of a break.
And in terms of Nick Pope, and the information we're getting is that it's not a serious injury. He missed some of training last week. He is receiving some treatment, but it feels to me like it's an international break injury in terms of that sort of, again, that sort of not going to.
Yeah.
And I'll just give you another Eddie Howe quote. This one is to do with Fabian Scher, who there'd been reports in Switzerland heading into Friday's match that Fabian Scher had pulled out of the squad due to an injury. Now, when Howe was asked about this, Fabian Scher, having played 90 minutes on Friday night, said, "Fabian's been carrying lots of different things in the last few weeks. He's been carrying a foot problem and also had concussion. So I think it's just a chance for him to rest his body and go again," which I'm sure Switzerland were delighted to hear after he'd just come off the pitch at the City Ground and played 90 minutes. So yeah.
Yeah. Fabian Scher needs a rest, but not for me.
Exactly.
Basically, that's what that means, isn't it?
Precisely.
I watched the game again on Sunday with my girlfriend, who's not a massive football fan.
You watched it again?
Yeah, well, I was very half watching it on Friday.
Are you Eddie Howe?
I've got a lovely afternoon planned for you.
And rewatched on Sunday morning. And she thought that Fabian Scher was like Scher the singer playing centre-back. So whenever it kept coming up on commentaries, I thought, didn't know Scher played for Newcastle.
Wow. I can barely believe that.
No, well, there you go.
I got that, Taylor. Don't worry.
I bet you wish you could turn back time now.
Yes,
George,
I do. I really do. I really do. We all do.
Oh my God, I've come to that late.
To before you asked me to host this podcast 4 years ago.
Yeah. You can do better than that, Sonny.
No, I can't, mate. That's exactly my level.
Sonny and Cher. Come on. Keep up.
Oh, come on, man. Don't slip them through. That's cheeky. Nice. Right, okay. Where were we? Oh, Chris, Miguel Almiron's going to be out for about 6 weeks as well. That's a bit of a shit one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this was actually a Paraguay's national coach who, on Friday, when they announced their squad and Almiron wasn't in it, came out and said that he's been injured in training for Newcastle. It's going to be 3 weeks. So that's 3 weeks. That's not great, but, you know, you miss Man United, might miss Brentford, but should be all right. And then Eddie Howe came out after the game and said he's injured his thigh and that actually it's going to be 6 weeks. So if that's from last week, you're basically talking almost the duration of April, which Newcastle have 7 matches, I think it is, across April. Very, very busy schedule. They already, Anthony Gordon, we are unsure if he's definitely going to be available for Manchester United. The hope was he was going to be, but it's basically an injury which the timescale's a little bit difficult to work out, whether it's sort of 2, 3, 4 weeks. And so I think he's going to be touch and go for that. So that's Newcastle's top goal scorer, their £40 million January signing, the only attacking reinforcement they made in January. And so that is a real negative. Almiron, maybe he's had lost a bit of form, but then came on against Wolves, really looked back to the Miguel Almiron of October, November.
Of who you were such a massive fan, Chris, let's not forget.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris.
Yes, well, you know, absence may make the heart grow fonder over the course of the next few weeks. Who knows? But no, it is a huge blow for Newcastle. And so let's hope that Elliot Anderson, if he's given opportunities, as he looks, he may be over the course of the next few weeks, he can grasp. And let's hope Alan Saint-Maximin rediscovers that form. And actually, Jacob Murphy, though, I will say, I mean, I wrote about him last week, and he's appeared in every single Premier League game this season, but last week was only his sixth start of the season. He's often used as sort of a sub to come on and do exactly what Eddie Howe wants from him, press high, bring that sort of intensity, final ball often lacking. But I thought, over the last two games, what Jacob Murphy offers that a lot of other players to Castle have don't is he's direct. He crosses the ball in the box at every opportunity. He's a right-footed player, play on the right-hand side. So rather than an inverted winger, as Newcastle usually play with, you have that ability to get the byline and cross it in. And so I think Jacob Murphy has justified his place over the last couple of weeks, and hopefully they are able to cover for Miguel Almiron's absence. Joe Linton come back from suspension's big as well, because he's someone who could play either in midfield or up front, but there's no doubt that Newcastle are stretched right now.
Absolutely, and it's a good chance as well, George, isn't it, for some of those players who are maybe close to fitness but not quite there yet to brush up a little bit. I'm thinking of people like Callum Wilson, Matt Target. It's a good chance for them guys to get some energy into their legs and to get a bit closer to being able to play.
Yeah, because Wilson, I mean, since making the World Cup squad, and you know, we were all delighted for him about that, you know, he just hasn't been the same Callum Wilson as in the first half of the season when he was obviously bursting to do that. So, you know, that Callum Wilson is a huge player for Newcastle and can be again. It's been a pretty, I don't want to say rubbish period, but he just hasn't looked the player that he was. You know, we know that he's not been training as much as you would like. You can see he's not looked sharp. And, you know, although he's still sort of caused centre-half problems, he's just not looked threatening himself. And the chances that he would normally take, he's not took. But, you know, they're going to need him. You know, they're going to need everybody who's available between now and the end of the season. So yeah, it is a good chance, hopefully, for him to get a bit of sharpness back into his legs.
He's got a bit of work to do now, though, Jacob, hasn't he, with Alexander Isak proving himself week after week. It's going to be a difficult one for Wilson to get back into that squad.
Yeah, I mean, I feel we said last week that last week was the time where Isak really had stamped his place on that starting striker jersey. And, I mean, he's just reinforced that last weekend, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And, Chris, it's not quite transfer season yet, but you've laid out some of the criteria you think that Newcastle will be looking for in the summer when they look into recruitment. So what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's only mid-March, so it's still very early days in terms of absolute final specific targets in terms of whittling down lists, but Newcastle have long lists of players, a lot of whom are long-term targets. Anthony Gordon, for example, would have been a target again this summer if Newcastle hadn't managed to secure him in January. Nico Williams was someone they looked at in January as well at Athletic Bilbao. It was sort of like one or the other, and he's still someone they're looking at. And essentially, what Newcastle need to wait on is it looks very much like they're going to be in European competition next season. It sort of depends which European competition they're in. Because if they get into the Champions League, there's an acceptance within the club, a realisation in the club that the depth really isn't there to be able to compete on, and that would mean potentially that they're going to have to do more business, more substantive business than they necessarily plan to. They still intend to do quite a lot of business this summer, left back, a centre back, one or two midfielders and one or two forwards are sort of what they're looking at right now. And that's going to be very difficult to do in a world of FFP, and can they actually sell to buy and to generate specific money? But basically what they are looking for is greater depth, greater quality where possible, but also a lot of the players, the sort of profile of player they're looking for, athletic, physical, tactically versatile. So basically similar to players of signed recently, similar to Gordon, similar to Isak. They want more players like that, very Eddie Howe-esque players who will continue to play in the way that Eddie Howe wants. Well, as we said last week when he spoke about Isak and he'd made that comment about him not being able to play 90 minutes, which he did on Friday, by the way, he played 96.
Yeah.
But he was saying, I don't think he can play the way that I want to play for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's very much, he needs, for Eddie Howe's high press, high intensity, physical style, he needs athletes. He needs Joe Willock type players. He needs Alexander Isak type players. And that's, again, what they're going to be looking for this summer.
Yes, I mean, we didn't mention Joe Willock earlier on, did we? But he was great again against Forest. He had another fantastic game, and he's putting performances together every week. He's going to need to be at his best when Man United come, George, on the 2nd of April. That's an absolutely huge game, isn't it? One of the classic Premier League fixtures, Newcastle against Manchester United at St James's Park. It should be a massive day, that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if Newcastle win that day, they can leap above them in the table on goal difference. And, yeah, it's a chance to get a bit of quick revenge after the cup final. Not that it would make up for that, I don't think. It's a sort of interesting time to be playing them in the sense that they obviously got stuffed by Liverpool. Take away the Europa League matches out, and they drew with Southampton, and they were so bloody spawny the other day against Fulham. And so yeah, it is a massive match, and it's, you know, yeah, there's Newcastle owe them one without a doubt. Not just for this cup final, but previous cup finals and previous things too. And it's just nice to be kind of considering this fixture as a big one again, as opposed to Newcastle trying to get out of it without conceding too many goals or whatever. You know, they've obviously had a brilliant second half of the season, or, you know, middle third of the season, whatever, and have come good. But yeah, I mean, you would think that St James's will be absolutely ferocious that day, and I don't think we need to sort of be approaching that fixture with trepidation now. It should be one to be relished.
Yeah, and there's an awful lot of history in that game, isn't there, George, as well? As you well know, that Man United match is something which is which we've come up against quite a lot, and it's a massive game. And you've been involved in a play that's currently happening at the Live Theatre. You've done a little panel for that.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out. If I'd been on the podcast last week, I'd have done it then, but not had a chance to see the play until this weekend. It's called Love It If We Beat Them, and it's actually about politics and the Labour Party, but it's set around 95-96, when Newcastle, of course, did give up that big lead to Manchester United in that incredible season. And it's a brilliant play. The panel was great fun. We had Paul Ferris on it and Steve Harper, Ian Mearns, the MP for Gateshead, and then the writer of the play, Rob Ward, and one of the actors in it, Davey Nannest, who's a mate of mine. And it's, it's really, really good. It's on at Live Theatre until this weekend. I know that everybody says there's only a few tickets left, but there genuinely are only a few tickets left. It's nearly sold out. But if you can get in, go and see it, because, I mean, I've said there should be trigger warnings for Geordies of a certain vintage because there are clips from 95, 96, which, I didn't know whether to be more traumatised by some of the plot lines or simply the football in 95, 96. But it's a beautiful piece of art and, a great reminder that we're very lucky to have some great, great cultural institutions in this city. So go and see it if you can.
Great stuff. Sounds fantastic. Right, let's take a quick break before we come back and round things up. We'll be back in a tick.
And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Right, chaps, let's round things up. Jacob, I'll come to you first. You've written about the latest developments in the Hillsborough overcrowding story. What has Eddie Howe said to the press about this one?
So he spoke about it on Friday ahead of the Nottingham Forest game and said that Newcastle owed it to their fans to kind of find out what had really happened in a Sheffield City Council meeting after the allegations of overcrowding in the FA Cup third round tie. Should also clarify it's not a freedom of information request, as some places have sort of reported. It was just kind of an information request into the council, which anybody can make. And sort of that has led to reduction in capacity at the Leppings Lane end. So it's gone down from a total of 4,700 to 3,700. In response to that, I'll just quote Richard Eyre of Sheffield City Council has said that Wednesday volunteered to reduce the stand's capacity rather than being made to, and they've stressed that it never breached its capacity or safety certificate. And then since then, it's become a formal requirement. There's some kind of quite interesting timings on this. So Newcastle got the information on Monday, and Wednesday only found out that it became a formal requirement on the Tuesday, which kind of led to a bit of an imbalance in terms of when that information became public, which didn't reflect brilliantly on Wednesday, but kind of that's the reason why that happened. And there wasn't sort of any kind of cover up from anyone's perspective. It was just kind of a matter of timing.
Whether voluntary or otherwise, it certainly appears that the reports from that game have led to the reduction in capacity. George, you were there that day as well, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in the upper tier. And I mean, we did speak about this afterwards, and I was very sort of careful about the language I chose, because obviously Hillsborough, you know, is synonymous with tragedy, and I didn't want to sort of use that kind of language. But it was very uncomfortable in that upper tier. It was absolutely packed. It was a very narrow space. And, you know, I didn't spend any time in it. I kind of got into it and got straight out of it because I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like it. So, yeah, I have to say well done to Newcastle for keeping at this. And, of course, the supporters' trust for collating responses to it and dealing with the club. I mean, I think that's a victory for fan activity right there. So, yeah, so well done. Well done to them.
Elsewhere, a terrific week for Becky Langley and Newcastle's women. They beat their main rivals, Durham Cestria, 1-0 on Tuesday night, and followed up, more importantly as well, with a 4-0 win over Norton and Stockton. Only five more league games for them. Five wins will see them win the league and promotion to the third tier. Chris, that's great stuff, that, isn't it?
It is. They had a bit of a sticky patch of their own early in the season where there were drawn games that they felt that they should have won. And obviously there's only one promotion slot, which is why they missed out last season narrowly. But to have got that form now, to have it within their own hands, and their final home game of the season will be at St James's Park as well on Sunday the 16th of April against Bradford City Women. So if you want to go to that, if you usually go to the men's home games, but equally if you haven't been able to get in and or desperate to go to St James's Park, want to cheer on Newcastle United side, then get along for that, because it could be when they clinch promotion, or it could be a key game in that. So for them to be in this position, it's exactly what you would want. It's in their hands, just like it's in the men's team's hands now to try and finish in the top four.
Lovely stuff. And George, just before we go, a little bit of an update on the Bobby 90 fanzine proceeds.
Yes, so obviously people remember. It feels like a lifetime ago, but for around the Liverpool game, we did a huge project, both at The Athletic and wider than that, with loads of written pieces, podcasts featuring Ollie, our brilliant producer, and then the flag design, the war flag design. And part of it was we also produced a fanzine. And it was put together by Charlotte, our good friend Charlotte Robson, and Peter, who you'll know as Budapest691 on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
Brilliant designer, brilliant graphic designer. And anyway, it's pretty much sold out, but more than £5,000 has now been donated to the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation,
wow,
which is just brilliant. We had the foundation front and centre of everything we were trying to do around it, but that money's now been paid over. So huge thank you to Charlotte and Peter in particular. And thank you to everybody who bought it. What a project that was.
Absolutely amazing. And some of them fanzines are still left if you want to pick that up, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. I think there's just a handful left now. But if you go to bobby90.bigcartel.com, you should still be able to pick up a copy.
Brilliant stuff, yeah. Check that out. Right then. Also, you should check out theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod and pick yourself up a subscription to The Athletic and pay just £1.99 a month for your first entire year. Thank you very much, chaps. That's it from Pod on the Tyne for this week. Cheers, Chris, for your time and for being all lovely and orange and stuff on the camera. It looks great.
Thank you. Going back to hit the beds once again to try and go from orange to mahogany.
You'll be catching up to Tyndall soon, won't you? Huh? Look at that. He's got such a healthy glow about him today, lads. He looks beautiful. Cheers, Jacob. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. End of this first block of Newcastle fixtures. Kind of not quite sure what the international break's going to really bring for Newcastle consumption. Do you kind of see it as a very much 2 weeks of kind of relief and balm, or do you find yourself missing it after 10 days?
I tend to be missing it after a couple of days, to be honest. I think I get a couple of days of, oh, this is quite nice, then I'll have to worry, and then I'm like, where's the football? Bring it back. Yeah. Need it back quick as possible. George, thanks very much for your time, man.
Not a problem. See you next week for more of this nonsense.
Absolutely. And thank you to all of you out there for listening as well. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Have a good week. We'll speak to you soon. Bye bye.
I have been having various different. Oh, there wasn't. When we were on the call earlier today, it was a yogurt and it was a biscuit, but then I had a blood orange one.
Have you ever considered not eating whilst communicating on video chat to other human beings, and because on the theory that it's actually quite rude.
Nope.
It's more we've adopted the diet of a young orangutan.
Do you remember what happened, Chris, when you've eaten whilst recording this podcast?
Well, I was told off for not having my camera on at that point, so therefore I now make sure to have the camera on.
Does Victoria Sponge count as one of your five a day? Because I've just polished one of them off about an hour ago.
An entire Victoria Sponge?
No, just a massive wedge of it.
The Athletic.